Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you're along with us. Our next segment is being powered by our friends at Napoli's Pizza and Pasta at 525 South Broadway Street, right here in Joshua, Texas. They have great lunch and dinner specials. Give them a call at 817-645-5555. And right now, it is time to talk some NFL. We are going to walk down memory lane, relive some wonderful memories, and the rivalry between two of perhaps the greatest quarterbacks that have ever been a part of the game. Of course, we're talking about Joe Montana and Steve Young, the battle between these two players and the right to lead the San Francisco 49ers. It was quite a competition back in the day, and I certainly remember it well. We are delighted to welcome into our program Adam Lazarus. He is the author of his brand new book. It is titled The Best of Rivals, Joe Montana, Steve Young, and the inside story behind the NFL's greatest quarterback controversy. And first of all, Adam, welcome to our show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I have to say congratulations, because it is a revealing and in-depth look at the NFL's greatest quarterback controversy. And I will say you do a great job of just, you know, providing that clarification and truly giving us the real story behind the rivalry between these two guys on and off the field. Was that that had to be a big point at the forefront of your mind, that we got to get the story straight, correct?
Yeah, it's I think a story that there was some maybe mythology or rumor surrounding it that led to some, I think, some difficulty in remembering the story. So I kind of wanted to go back and tell it the way, you know, retrace the footsteps and get as many people's perspective as I possibly could, just to sort of retell it. Because in that era, the late 80s, early 90s, that was really one of the biggest subplots in the NFL at that time, was the Joe Montana, Steve Young quarterback controversy.
Well, Joe Montana and Steve Young, obviously, Adam, they were very good for each other, because if you look back, as you had just talked about, in the 80s, early 90s, 87 to 94, two, you know, future Hall of Famers, they spurred on each other to remarkable heights, made each other better throughout that competition, and it included three Super Bowl wins and three MVP awards. They made each other better.
Yeah, that's something that I kind of wanted to explore a little bit in the story, is whether or not the competition made the two better. You know, that's something that I think a lot of people assume, is that pushing a guy like Joe Montana and pushing a guy like Steve Young made them better. That's not something they necessarily believed in. I think they both felt that they didn't really need any extra motivation. They were both their greatest competitors were themselves, is exactly what Joe Montana told me. But I do think there is some sort of element involved in that, with a guy being pushed, you know, extra motivation subconsciously or consciously, I don't even know. But I do think that that competition bred success, and that was something that some of the other 49ers told me, that was, they saw that with Joe and Steve, but it was sort of a trademark of the Bill Walsh 49er organization, was competition and getting the best out of players by pushing them and not letting them feel complacent or stable in their job. And I think that sort of fear of failure, I guess, or that fear of being benched, really led a lot of guys to bring out the best in them.
And that is one of the things that's great about the book, is you did offer some candid interviews, not only with Joe Montana and Steve Young, but Jerry Rice, George Seifert. I want to talk about that here in just a moment. But what is important to note is, of course, these guys, you know, really set a standard for excellent, competing and giving your best. But when you portray the relationship between these two rivals, so they weren't enemies. I mean, did they ever have a crossword between the two of them?
Well, you know, talking to them and talking to the teammates, it never got to that point. I guess there may be some hidden stories that no one's ever those are sworn to secrecy about. But no, it didn't seem like it was a hostile relationship. It didn't seem like there was shouting matches in the locker room or anything like that. And I believe them when they say that, and I never came across any stories like that. But I do just think that there was a real, maybe a frosty relationship between the two. There was some sort of unspoken sort of hostility, I guess you would say, because Joe didn't like being challenged for the job, and he didn't really like Steve sort of pushing, you know, sort of subtly pushing for his candidacy at the job, and Steve didn't really like sitting on the bench. He was in the middle of his prime. He didn't want to be a bench player, and he had been playing his whole career, and he really felt that he should be getting out on the field, and he was sort of brought to town with the expectation that he was going to be playing. So I think that sort of put them in a bad spot and put their relationship, it was never going to get off to a good start because of that. You know, so I think the relationship was testy, and that was something like you were saying earlier about telling the true story. I think a lot of people just assume that there was this hatred of each other. I don't really think that was the case. I just think that these two guys were in a bad spot, were in a competitive spot, competing for the same thing. And, you know, there were two different personalities. That's a key part of this story, is they just weren't really destined to get along or really be friends. But I don't think it was quite as hated as a lot of people have suggested.
Joe Montana, Steve Young, two just outstanding quarterbacks. And it is kind of cool to find out, you know, what was their approach to the game? And because each of them brought their own skill set and they were very different and their outlooks on playing the position of quarterback to the field. It couldn't have come at two totally different areas.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do have to remember that Joe was sort of nearing the end of his, not nearing the end, but he was already a polished player, probably a future Hall of Famer, an All-Pro by the time Steve Young came to town. So they were at different stages of their career, and I guess in some ways different stages of their life. But like you said, they both did have these different approaches. You know, Joe was the classic pocket passer. He did make plays with his feet. He could scramble. He was very athletic. But his job, he said over and over again, was to get the ball in the hands of his playmakers, with guys like Jerry Rice and you know, earlier Freddie Solomon, those kinds of players. His job as a quarterback was to distribute the ball. And he understood that was the way that the offense he was in worked, and it worked best, and clearly it worked. It won two Super Bowls in the early 80s. Steve Young wasn't quite schooled in that same philosophy when he came to the 49ers, and it took him several years to really, I think, understand that. He was so athletic, and he was so just tremendous runner. He could have been an NFL running back, a lot of people believe, because he could move so fast, and he was very tough, and he had just great moves, that I think he was much quicker to abandon a play and run with the ball and try to get yardage with his feet than stay in the pocket and do that, you know, ultra-important element of standing in the pocket and throwing the ball and getting it to guys like Jerry Rice. So I think that was sort of one of the things that led to this dichotomy between the two, was they did view the job in a different way. But I do think that clearly by the end of his career, and certainly towards the later years of his career, Steve Young became more like Joe Montana in the sense of being more of a quarterback first than a runner.
We are taking a fascinating look at one of the best one-on-one battles in the NFL, in NFL history, Joe Montana, Steve Young, and you definitely, Adam, you're spot on. I mean, Steve Young, when you look and think about his playing days, I mean, he had terrific mobility, but Joe Montana, he's always been one of my favorite quarterbacks. He really epitomized his nickname, Joe Cool, on the field, because this was a guy that never got rattled, you know, whether he was facing a blitzing linebacker or if they were down like 28 points at halftime. He just, you know, continued to have that unwavering focus, and nothing seemed to rattle him.
Yeah, that's, I think, as much as the Super Bowls and everything, I think that was sort of his trademark, was that no lead was too great for him to overcome, I think, and no situation was too hard for him to get out of. And that was something that he had built up even earlier in his high school career, in his college career. That's something that I do in the book, is sort of take a brief look at their upbringing in their early days, sort of their formative days, and Joe sort of had that ability to never blink as early as his high school career, and certainly in his college career. He's known for one of the great comebacks in college football history when he was at Notre Dame, and he did the same thing his first year as a starter with the 49ers. So he really lived up to that name, Joe Cool, in that sense. And the other thing that I like about Joe and his story and the nickname is his personality was just, he was just such a laid-back guy. He sounds like he was a real fun guy to be around in the huddle and in the locker room. He was just sort of carefree, and he was just a regular, you know, excuse the expression, but he was sort of just a regular Joe. And it made for him sort of having this aura about him in the NFL and in the locker room with his teammates. And that was something I think Steve Young was sort of always battling against, was this legacy of Joe Montana. He was, in some ways, he was larger than life. And then I think in the efforts to sort of replace him, he found that out the hard way.
Yes, and you did mention the book, of course, Joe Montana. He was a blue-collar, good Catholic boy. And Steve Young, I mean, a devout Mormon. He was from Connecticut. And I have to ask you, was he kind of cheap? Because when you start reading some of the stories about him, despite having, you know, millions of dollars in the bank, I mean, he drove this beat-up 1965 Oldsmobile Cutlass and had, what, 270,000 miles on it. I mean, why would he not go out and go get a new car? I mean, really?
Well, I don't think he was cheap. I think he was very frugal, or I think he didn't want to be seen as, and that's something that is sort of forgotten about Steve Young. He didn't want to be seen as sort of this money crazy guy. This is in the 80s when the big contracts were starting to get out of control. He signed this big contract with the USFL, and he almost immediately regretted it. He made him the highest paid player in sports history for a brief time. They gave him a $40 million contract to go play in the USFL for the Los Angeles Express instead of going to the NFL. And I think that always sort of weighed on him, that he was sort of expected to have this greatness. And I think he was very fearful of being seen as a guy who was sort of money hungry or attention hungry. And I think that was something that he struggled to deal with later on in his career.
Tell us a little bit about as far as some of those interviews that you had an opportunity to talk. You said with Jerry Rice and even George Seifert.
Yeah, Jerry was great, and George Seifert was great. It was interesting that both of those guys were sort of caught in the middle of it, because Jerry had begun his career with Joe Montana, and everything he had achieved early on was in large part due to Joe Montana's greatness. So I think he was a little hesitant about this transition, just like everybody else was, because we didn't know what we were going to get in Steve Young. I mean, he certainly had the talent, and he certainly had or played well in spurts, but everything that was at stake with Super Bowls and Hall of Fame bids and everything like that with this transition, and I think they were sort of slow. The transition was slow. There were some growing pains, and in some ways, George Seifert sort of had carried the same model of great expectations, because when he took over for Bill Walsh, he too had to sort of fill the footsteps of a great player, of a great person, and great NFL icon in Bill Walsh. So he could sort of empathize with Steve Young when Steve had to start replacing Joe Montana. It was sort of a nice little parallel.
How did Bill Walsh, during his time as head coach, how did he handle the best of these two rivals?
Well, I mean, he's really the reason this happened. And you could say it was his genius, and it certainly played out that way, because he ended up getting Joe Montana's this last few years of his career when he was with Bill Walsh were probably the greatest years of his career, and he helped turn Steve Young into a Hall of Famer. I don't really know if it was that Machiavellian of a decision or not, or if he was just trying to have a backup plan in place for Joe Montana, because he had been breaking down and having some injuries. But he certainly didn't mute the controversy at all. He talked about it. He was the first person to say quarterback controversy. And this is at a time in the 1988 preseason when Montana was, coming off an all-pro year and had won two Super Bowls and won two Super Bowl MVPs. So he didn't shy away from the controversy. And like we were talking earlier, I think in some ways he viewed it as a motivating factor for both guys, and he sort of played it up.
Joe Montana, Steve Young, the inside story behind the NFL's greatest quarterback controversy. The title of the book is Best of Rivals. We've been visiting with the author, Adam Lazarus. And tell all of our listeners where to go and get a copy of this. And also, just give them a little bit of a sneak peek, because there are some wonderful photographs in this book as well.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the photographs.
Yes, they were great.
Contributing those, so everybody can check those out. You can go to Amazon and do a search for Best of Rivals. You can go to my website, www.alazarus.com, A-L-A-Z-A-R-U-S.com. Barnes & Noble has it. You can go to their website or many of their local stores. So it's available in a lot of places.
Well, you do a great job of just kind of breaking it all down, the dynamic between these two guys and the competition. And it was, as I said earlier, a fascinating read, and to just look back at that time in the NFL. So, Adam, thank you so much for dropping by. Congratulations on the book. And also, are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, LazarusA57, LazarusA57, and you can check out, sometimes I post things about the book and little tidbits about the story and some of the things involved there.
Great. I will definitely subscribe to you, so you'll have a new follower today for sure, okay?
All right, well, thank you.
Thanks, Adam. And again, the title of the book is Best of Rivals by Adam Lazarus. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thanks a lot for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead. We're going to continue with our NFL and college football conversation with Jason Peter in our Under the Helmet segment. Stay close. Did you know that Complete Production Services is one of North America's leading oilfield service providers, offering field support solutions, equipment, and well production optimization and enhancement to some of the largest oil and gas companies? Complete Production is fully committed to developing solutions for your operating environment and can handle any oilfield demands, well servicing and rentals. Most importantly, they are committed to superior customer service and also focus on safety and the environment. Service, expertise, innovation. Complete Production Services. Join us online at CompleteProductionServices.com.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter. Under the Helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Here we go. Elissa Walker-Campbell back with you this weekend on the fastest hour in radio. And that, of course, is the Big E Sports Show. We want you to join us online at eradiosports.com. Also, check out our web interviews. Very special interview we had just had on Donnie Nelson, the general manager and president of the Dallas Mavericks. And right now, we are going to shift gears completely. We're going to go talk some college football with the guy we always look forward to talking to each and every week, Jason Peter, three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. We're going to talk some Big Ten and Big 12. Jason P., how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. This is always such an exciting time of year if you are a sports fan, and a lot of ground to cover. In fact, we had an author on who was talking about your former coach in George Seifert.
Yeah. George Seifert was, Coach Seifert was with me in Carolina for 3 years, from 99 to 01, and then they brought in John Fox. We never got it going, I guess, the way that Jerry Richardson, the owner, and obviously the fan base had hoped. Our best season was 8-8, and we missed the playoffs. But I liked Coach Seifert. He was kind of a cool, kind of laid-back California guy, always wearing the aviator shades out at practice, and we had a good relationship, and I enjoyed my time playing under him.
Jason Peter with us. I got to make sure that we mention this segment's being powered by our friends at Mercer Well Service. They always do such a great job supporting our program. And it's always fun, Jason, to, you know, kind of relive some of your NFL memories. But I know something very close to your heart is your Nebraska Cornhuskers. And how about picking up a four-point win on the road at Michigan State? Now, you guys have won three games in a row. How do you feel about your team up to this point?
Still don't feel any more comfortable. I mean, maybe a little bit in terms of Taylor Martinez, just because he's not—he's able to put together another late game type of touchdown winning drive, and that's something that going into this season or in the previous years with Taylor as quarterback, you just never had that sort of confidence. But on the other side of the coin here, you have a guy who, again, coughed up the football. I think he threw for three touchdowns or four touchdowns, but he also threw for three or four interceptions as well. And that's just, you know, you're going to walk that edge long enough, it's not going to work out for you every single time. And, you know, it's a fundamental of the game that you just, as a quarterback, you can't give the other team more opportunities than what they already have coming. And you know, it's something that has bothered this Nebraska team all year. It's been an issue over the last few years. They've got to get it cleaned up, because at some point they're going to find themselves in another late situation where the game's on the line and it's the final drive. And, you know, they were fortunate. They got a big call, a pass interference call that was not a pass interference call, you know, late in the game there on that last drive. And ultimately it extended the drive, moved the ball down the field into touchdown, into that touchdown threatening area. And sure enough, Taylor Martinez found Jamal Turner, a wide receiver, for the go-ahead touchdown. So they pulled it out in East Lansing.
And he really did show, you know, some grit, some leadership, you know, as you were just mentioning, you know, a come-from-behind road victory. How do you feel like he is maturing as a junior quarterback?
He's gotten better. He certainly has gotten better. You know, there's a lot of talk around here about whether or not he's all Big Ten quarterback. And, I you know, for me, I'm not there. You know, especially when you have a guy like Braxton Miller at Ohio State who has his team undefeated. You know, we still have suffered two bad losses this year, one at the hands of Braxton Miller and Ohio State, and the other one out in at the Rose Bowl against Jim Moore and UCLA. And, you know, when you talk about the premier quarterbacks, for me, it's not just about the real highs, it's also about, you know, how low are the lows. And you want consistency out of your leaders. You know, the thing that you could always, as a player, you know, the guys that you could count on, the guys that you knew when you were going to stick your hand in the dirt and the guy lined up to the right of you, to the left of you, was going to come every single play, and you knew that about him. Those are the types of guys you want. Not the guy who may throw four interceptions, and yeah, he threw four touchdowns, but you just, there's got to be more consistency there, I think, when you start to mention certain guys as elite players. And that's the thing he still, to me, has to go out and show.
It's our Under the Helmet segment with Jason Peter, who joins us each and every week, talking some Big Ten football. Just one more quick question about your Huskers. How has the fan base, I mean, I do actually have a lot of folks down here in Texas who are like, ask Jason, you know, how is Coach Bo Pelini being received as far as with the fans? I mean, I know that, you know, taking a loss against Ohio State, what, and UCLA as well, that certainly was difficult, but has he gotten the reprieve, and are they starting to believe in him and get behind this team again?
The thing about Nebraska fans.
Okay, break it down, Jay.
They don't care if you win, if you only win. They care how you win as well. Mm-hmm. And these close games, Nebraska fans look at the Big Ten Conference and they say, this is arguably the worst conference, major conference in college football. I mean, you're right there with the Big East. And they feel like Nebraska in Bo Pelini's fifth year, that they should be beating these teams more handily. And these close calls, whether it's in Evanston against Northwestern, or even this Michigan State team that basically had no offense with the quarterback that they had in there. I mean, Le'Veon Bell was it. And they knew Le'Veon Bell was going to be the guy, and they still let him rush for almost 200 yards. And people just, they want you to win a certain way. They expect you to beat teams by a certain amount of points, and it's just not happening. And then when that doesn't happen, then they pick apart the things about whether it's your character, your personality. And the thing with Bo is the sideline antics. And I know there was just a caller this past week on his call-in show on the Husker Radio Network who questioned him about his sideline antics, and he got mad. He got mad. He's, you know, I'm tired of people questioning me about my sideline antics. There are coaches out there who do worse than I do. And to me, I guess I can understand the frustration, but to me, you know, it's almost, that was like a kid's response. Well, there's somebody, you know, so-and-so does it worse than me. Why are you mad at me? Because Jim Bob does it worse. He, you know, that's like a kid's answer. Like, you're the head coach at Nebraska. Say that you've had some issues on the sidelines. Uh-huh. Say it's just your passion, and this is what's coming out, and you need to do a better job of channeling it sometimes. And boom, that's it. But, you know, it's, well, I'm not the worst. So-and-so is worse than me. And so, you know, there are some areas where people, you know, they nitpick, and then also I think people are going to want him to make some staff changes at the end of this year. So we'll see what happens.
Let's shift over and talk about the Big 12 Conference quickly. One of the big matchups on hand this weekend on Saturday night, of course, is K-State versus TCU. And my goodness gracious, we just continue to tip our hat to head coach Gary Patterson, who just continually reinvents himself. His ability to manipulate and maneuver and just this chess match. I mean, it's just amazing to watch how the season continues to unfold and they're able to regroup after, you know, losing two in a row. And then they just go for it. I mean, he's amazing.
Channeled his Tom Osborne from the 84 Orange Bowl against Miami when Nebraska said, you know, we're not going to kick this thing. We're going for the win. We're going for two. And unfortunately for Nebraska, it didn't work out. But Coach Patterson, he felt confident in the way his team was playing, and gutsy call, and was the right call. I think the world of Coach Patterson. Obviously, I don't know him as well as you guys down there in that area, and sometimes it's easier to say you like somebody or dislike somebody when you're sitting afar, but from everything that I've seen, just the things that I've heard him say and the way that he conducts himself, you know, he's a premier coach, and that's why one of his names always mentioned whenever jobs come up each year. And I think for TCU, their first year in this Big 12 conference, I think they've done a pretty darn good job, and they're going to have their hands full, obviously, this weekend. And this is the game that I'm looking forward to, this Kansas State TCU game, because it's going to be two tough, hard-nosed football teams going at it, and you know, you really got to tip your cap not just to TCU, but I mean, look at what Bill Snyder is doing again in Manhattan. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Here's a coach that everybody had said, you know, your time's over. You don't understand. The game's changed. This is the thing I hate when people say that the game has changed since, you know, the 90s or the 80s. I mean, football's football, and that's what he does. He coaches the fundamentals, and they go out and they do the right thing. You know, Kansas State, real quick, I know we're running out of time. They've scored 111 points off of turnovers this year, and they've had zero scored against them off of turnovers. I mean, that's unheard of, but, you know, they're a well-disciplined, well-coached team.
That's an incredible stat. Jason, we certainly look forward to doing a recap next weekend. It's always a pleasure when you drop by. And enjoy a nice weekend, okay?
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead. Remember, go to our radio website, eradiosports.com, and we will be right back.